Our theme for the year is not ashamed. And I wanted to preach a message in our concluding night to talk a little bit about our theme, but it was interesting. A few weeks ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago, Jeremiah Clark began texting me. Apparently he had gone through either a concordance or probably just an app on his phone, and he typed in not ashamed, and he found several verses where not ashamed was in there. He's like, oh, you should preach on this. You should use this. You could use this. And I said, you know, when you preach in chapel, you just preach a topical message on not ashamed. And, you know, he showed me all these places. And to be honest, I was unaware that the same phrase was mentioned in several contexts. But tonight, I want to beg you to do something. It's the title of my message, and it's simply this. Don't be ashamed. Now, I want you to look with me in Romans chapter 1, in verse number 13. It says, now I would not have you ignorant, brethren, that oft times I purposed to come unto you, but was let hitherto, that I might have some fruit among you also, even as among other Gentiles. I am debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise. So as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are Rome also. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. For it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. When I was a kid growing up, I was not raised in a typical household in a number of regards. For some of you, you would think maybe in a typical household you were raised in a Christian home. And for me, that was not the case. So as a result, I was exposed to a lot of different things that some of you would say I've never seen before in my life. And that's all right. I'm glad that's the case. But also, my parents were a little bit of a different sort. What I mean by that is that my dad became disabled around the age of 10. With emphysema, had to quit his full-time job. My mother had always been disabled. She was born with cerebral palsy. And so all of her life, she was crippled. She could walk. And the older she got, arthritis settled in. But even in those days, she was limited. She could not run. She could walk fast if she was chasing me and I was doing something wrong, but she couldn't run. I could always outrun my mom and my dad eventually before it was over with. And we lived in very poor circumstances at that point, both of them living off of a disabled income, didn't have the best of clothes and things like that. That was just a little bit about my childhood. And you know, I'm sad to say to you this evening that there were times in my childhood that I was ashamed of my parents. You say, what do you mean? Well, it all started one time when my parents, usually I would ride the school bus to school. And because I was an only child, my mother would always walk me in the early grades to the end of the driveway and stand there with me. I thought that was cool for about 2 days until the kids in the school bus said, oh, your mommy comes down the driveway with you. And so I go home and I'm like, you know, Mom, you don't have to do that. I mean, I'm 7 years old. I'm a big boy, you know. You don't have to walk down. But she just absolutely insisted. And, you know, eventually I got over that. But there would be times when I wouldn't ride the school bus and they would have to take me to school. And I'll never forget, they dropped me off one day. And I went into the school and one of my classmates said, hey, is that your grandparents that dropped you off? Now, what I didn't tell you is when I was born, my dad was 42, my mom was 36, so you do the math. By the time I'm school age, they're the age of some of their grandparents. And when he said that to me, when he said, hey, did your grandparents drop you off at school? Now, I'm ashamed to tell you this, but I was a little bit ashamed. You know, it's one of those things where we're just as kids, we feel like we have this image that we have to keep up, that we impose upon ourselves. And so I'll tell you what, the next time my mom and dad's coming to pick me up from school, I'm not just marching out there, I'm just sort of standing behind a pillar. And then when the car finally comes to a stop, I just make a mad dash to the car. Well, I don't want anybody seeing me because I don't want to hear them say, oh, that must be my grandparents. But I'm awfully ashamed to admit to you tonight that I was ashamed of my parents because they just weren't the status quo. There are people that would say, why does your mom talk that way? Why can't your mom run? Why doesn't your dad have a job? And you know, as a young person, I had to battle those things, and I'm just sad to say I didn't always handle them well. And I stand before you tonight rather humbled just to even admit that I was ashamed at times of the two human beings in the world that were supposed to love me the most. But I have a greater confession to make to you tonight. It's sad to say that in my Christian life, sometimes I have been ashamed of the gospel of Christ. We read the Apostle Paul's declaration when he says, for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. And we poke out our breasts and our chests and we say, you know what? That's the way that it ought to be. But I am sad to say in our day and time that that element is missing. And we're ashamed of the gospel of Christ. I want to ask you a question. What did you do with the gospel this summer? When's the last time you found yourself bearing the marks of your favorite sports team, but yet unwilling to bear the marks of the cross? Young people, I'm telling you, there is an urgent need tonight for men and women in this room to be like the Apostle Paul, and not only with a wordy declaration, but with a life say, I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. And I really believe that one of the weaknesses I see year after year in our student body is a growing unfamiliarity in sharing the gospel and being bold and not ashamed of the gospel. And tonight, we would do well to come to grips with the apprehension that we have in our hearts and return to New Testament Christianity and be more willing to bear a cross than we are even the logo of our favorite team. That's the need of the hour, but my question is will we hear it? Now, as we examine our passage tonight, I break it down very simply. Number one, you see a purpose. And if you grasp Paul's purpose, I'll guarantee you one thing, you won't be ashamed of the gospel of Christ. In verse 13, he said, now I would not have you ignorant, brethren. You know, that's probably the motto verse of your teachers in your classes. They don't want you to be ignorant, brethren. But he says, now I would not have you ignorant, brethren, that oft times I purposed to come unto you, but was let hitherto. You know, we lift up Paul as a superman, and he certainly is an outstanding Christian, and we lift him up in such a way. But, you know, there's times I see glimpses in the Apostle Paul's life, and I'm like, I can relate to that. He said, there were a lot of times I purposed to come to you, but he said, I was hindered. In other words, here's a man, a giant of the faith. He said, hey, I want to come to Rome, and I want to visit you, and I want to minister. But it was like time after time, you know, he was withheld from doing so. You know, I love that because it lets me know that as a human being, there are times that I, like Paul, we purpose to do something and we're hindered, and we automatically say, boy, I'll tell you, we must have been devastatingly out of the will of God, when the truth, it was God using our circumstances to guide us in His timing. We get so frustrated sometimes. You try to put your foot through a door, and when you do and you get to where you're going, you'll regret it. But here, Paul, he was going to go, something happened. You say, what happened? I have no idea. I know it wasn't the car breaking down because he didn't have a car. But whatever the case, he couldn't go, and he made up his mind, hey, I want to go. Now here's my question. Why was Paul so persistent in going to Rome? It wasn't because he wanted to see the Vatican. Do you know when Brother Piero went to Italy? I think he was with Brother Maeda. He brought me back something that I keep in a cabinet. I don't show everybody, but it is a bobblehead of the Pope. And there are times I have stood in Mrs. Conley's office and I've stuck that little bobblehead right there by the door, and I've just, all you can see is the window. You can see the Pope and his head waving back and forth. But Paul didn't want to go to Rome. Paul didn't want to go to Rome to see the sights. I'm sure people say, well, I want to go to Rome. I want to see the Colosseums. I want to see this and that. I'm not against sightseeing. If you've ever seen it, I'm not here to shame you tonight. But I want you to understand, Paul didn't want to go there to be a sightseer. You know why Paul wanted to go there? Look at the last half of the verse. That I might have some fruit among you, even as among other Gentiles. Paul frequently wanted to go visit the Romans. That was a constant push. He had a heart and a desire. And young people, listen, as we see the last half of this verse, understand there ought to be a frequency in your life. There was a frequency in Paul's life. He constantly wanted to push out and to bear fruit and to be a blessing to those in Rome and to preach the gospel. It was something that was nagging him and nagging him. And eventually God opened the door. Let me tell you, you'll not be ashamed with the gospel when there's a frequency that is bearing in your soul. I want to go and I want to be a blessing. And then Paul mentions this idea of fruit. That I might have some fruit among you also, even as among other Gentiles. Now, I'm of the persuasion that when he says fruit here, I do believe that he's probably talking about ministering to those in Rome and the church there and bearing fruit among them, being a blessing, edifying them and lifting them up. I believe that that very well was probably the specific case. You say, well, how do you bear fruit? Well, Galatians chapter 5 tells us about the fruit of the Spirit. And how do you do that? Walk in the Spirit and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. And so, listen, God wants you to bear fruit. He wants you to bear the fruit of the Spirit. He wants your life to be filled with love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, temperance. Against such there is no law. And you know, that's what God wants you to have, and you can have it. But I would like to just step aside for just a moment. Not only do I believe that it's important to acknowledge the fruit that a believer yields in edifying one another, but do you know the Bible also speaks about a matter of the fruitfulness of a Christian? And I want you to hear me carefully tonight. Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, the Bible says, ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. By the way, when you go to Israel and you're on one side of the Sea of Galilee and you look out and see Tiberias with all of its lights. Now listen, I know they didn't have street lights back in Jesus' day, but I'll promise you this, any light that was in that town was going to be very clearly seen on the hillside because it was pitch dark everywhere else. But he said, neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Now listen to this. So let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. I want to ask you, is your light shining? Did your light shine this summer? Or was your light soiled by the world? Was your light dimmed by the old habits of life? Was your light dimmed by associations? God tonight wants you to be a light, and He wants you to shine before the world. Why? So that they may see your good works. Why? Not so that you are esteemed in their eyes, but it glorifies your Father in heaven. Let me tell you something about this matter of fruit bearing. I feel like in some places, you know what's happened? People have been so incensed about, or so infatuated with the idea of building personalities and making people just a notch on their belt so that they can tell how many people they've pointed to Christ. Let me tell you, it's not about you. I'll tell you what it's about: the glory of God. Any light that you have to shine, when it affects other people for the good, listen to me, it's to the glory of God. But Paul had that purpose in his heart. John 15, verse 8, "Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit, so shall ye be my disciples." Listen, young people, God just didn't bring you to Bible college to get a degree. He wants you to bear fruit. He wants you to make a difference in the lives of others. He wants you to share the gospel. He wants people to be able to look at your life and hear your words and be pointed to Calvary and drawn closer to God. And you know what? If that is your purpose, you won't be ashamed of the gospel. How do you bear fruit as a Christian? You know, if we went around, we have a lot of fruit trees in the area. South Carolina has a lot of peach trees there. And, you know, if you went up to Mr. Peachtree and you said, "Mr. Peachtree, how do you make fruit?" He wouldn't say anything because he's a tree, but if he could, he wouldn't say to you, "Well, this is what I do. When the springtime comes, I just go like this." That's not how you do it. That's not how you bear fruit. You say, "I want to be used in the lives of others." Well, it's just not sitting there and just... That doesn't work. All it does is give you a stroke. But young people, you know, the Bible does tell you this. John chapter 15, verse 1. "I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Here it is, abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, no more can ye, except ye abide in me." You say, "I want to be used to reach other people with the gospel." I'll tell you what, you abide in Him, you walk with God, you listen to His directives in your life, be totally yielded, and you abide in Him and Him in you. But you know, when we don't have that purpose and our purpose becomes of self-motivation and self-exaltation, we'll be ashamed of the gospel. We'll be ashamed of Him and proud of self. But number two, I want you to see tonight not only Paul's purpose, but I want you to see his perspective in verse 14. He says, "I am debtor both to the Greeks and the barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise." You know why some people are ashamed of the gospel? Because they don't have the perspective that Paul had. It's interesting. You know what Paul said? Paul didn't say right here at this moment, "I am apostle." Or as children sometimes like to say to their younger siblings, "I'm the boss." Paul didn't say, "Listen, I'm a Pharisee of the Pharisees. I have been really taught in school at the feet of people that were very respected in my day, and I know a lot of Bible, and I have a 4-year college degree, and I've been taught to be a missionary. I can live off of grass and twigs the rest of my life." You know what Paul said? He said, "I am debtor." Don't you think a degree in and of itself is going to set your soul on fire for this world? Say, you sound like you're preaching against degrees. No, I'm preaching against setting up things in our lives as if that's going to be the standard to get us through, when the Bible makes it very clear. Paul said, "I am debtor." You know, sometimes we kick the millennial generation, Generation Z, because we talk about all the selfishness that seemingly abounds and how people just seem so self-serving. But I'm telling you, with every generation, we have naturally a rotten perspective. We think the world owes us. You know what I believe is one of the greatest hindrances to people surrendering for full-time service and people going to the mission field and serving God in a full-time capacity, I don't know that it's so much the devil as much as it is a love and an infatuation with the world and thinking the world owes us. You say, is the devil for people going in the ministry? No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he probably doesn't have to waste a lot of time because we're so infatuated with the world and we think the world owes us. And as long as that's our perspective, we're not going to care about the heathen in Africa. As long as we have that perspective, we'll let Shelby, North Carolina die and go to hell. By the way, if you're not going to love them in Shelby, you'll certainly not love them across the sea. If you've come here and you think the world owes you and you need to teach every teacher, listen to me, you need to change your perspective. Paul said, I am debtor. He said, I owe them. You look at that crowd and you say, what do I owe them? I mean, what did they do for me? Listen, you owe them. After what Jesus Christ did for you, it has made you a debtor to all the world. When that disease of selfishness begins to rise in your heart and it changes your perspective, listen to me, it'll take you away from what God originally called you to do. It breaks my heart to find some people that are drawn away from ministry. Why? Because no longer do they think they're a debtor. They think the world owes them. I've put in my time, and now it's my time for the world just to pay me and for me to take it easy. Paul never had that mentality. He said, I am debtor. And the people that he's serving are the Greeks and the barbarians, the wise and the unwise. Sometimes you take that for face value and you're like Greeks and then barbarians. You know, we use the word in our day and time, he is a barbarian. That usually means that he eats with his hands, uses his sleeves for a napkin, and he's ruthless and cruel. But it very well could have been that was just Paul saying, hey, the Greeks and everybody who's non-Greek, listen, whoever it is, the people that are wise and are unwise, the Greeks were given to human philosophy. And then there were others, I mean, they were just rather simple in their minds. It's easy to look down on other people. You say, well, they're not just like me, or you know what, I'm smarter than them. I don't care how smart you are. If you're a Christian here tonight, you're a debtor to everyone. Just a servant. But you know why some people are ashamed of the gospel? It's because they don't see their rightful place. I'm a debtor. If you have a purpose like Paul and you have a perspective like Paul, you'll not be ashamed of the gospel. But I love this in verse 15. I want you to see also his passion. In evangelistic preaching, I go over this. It'll be a few weeks out for these guys. But listen, everybody's passionate about something. I remember years ago, there was a guy in my evangelistic preaching class. He's rather quiet and even keeled. But the very moment you started talking negatively about Apple products, are you talking about like Red Delicious? No, I'm talking about iPhone, iPad. I mean, the very moment you started talking, I had this broke and I had to fix this. You could just see it. It was just a wave that just rode right up his neck. And then finally he'd say, I'd like to say something about that if you wouldn't mind. He was passionate. Everybody in this room's passionate about something. In your own way and in your own right. It may be manifested differently. And I try to encourage my guys in evangelistic preaching. If you can't be passionate about the gospel, you're not worth shooting. It's only the best thing that's ever happened to you. And you show it in whatever way that may be natural to you. But I love Paul's passion. He begins the verse with the word so. In light of the fact I've been trying to get to you people numerous times and God has held me back, and the fact that now I want to get among you and I want to bear fruit and I want to see God do good, And in light of the fact that I'm a debtor to the Greeks and the barbarians, in light of all of these things, so, and I love how he puts it, when he says, so as much as in me is. You say, I don't understand that. That was Paul's way of saying, with everything that's within me, as much as I know how, in light of these things, he says, I am ready to preach the gospel. A few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to go up to New York City to meet up with two of my friends, and we watched a New York Mets game. We went to that. It's down here. Everybody hates the Mets. Everybody likes the Braves, it seems like, at least from the local area. And you know what I was looking forward to? We had a good time. The team actually won, which at that point was a miracle because they were on a bad run, and they've done fairly well since then, but then they hit a recent skid. That's why I don't put my hope in sports teams, because they will let you down, no doubt about it. But I was looking forward to that. I was pretty eager. And we had a great time. I remember going up there, just going to be very quickly, up and back. And we had a great time. You know, sometimes I've found that guys around the school are very eager about food. We had a guy several years ago. We told them that we were going to take a trip to a restaurant down in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Ladies, I would not really encourage you to go to this restaurant unless you like a lot of grease. Usually with my wife, she's like, honey, please, let's dry that off, or let's get that grease off of that. That's not good. And, you know, we men, we think, no, that is good. That's the flavor. But I remember when we made the announcement, we said, hey, we're going to go down to this restaurant in South Carolina. It's called The Beacon. And I'm telling you, I mean, this guy, he was like sold on it. He had heard the stories of the hamburgers that were this big and the onion rings and fries that were piled this high that would give you grease poisoning. And when you talked to those guys in the van on the way down, I'm telling you, they were excited. It was like Christmas Eve. You ever had something that you've been eager about? Something that you said, boy, I cannot wait. You know what Paul said? Paul said, so as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. You know, one of the things that ought to set this school apart from other schools, there ought to be an eagerness to preach the gospel in the hearts of our students more so than any other place. And I'll tell you why. It's not because it's ambassador. It's because, you know what? We're teaching people to be ambassadors for Christ. But that eagerness is not always there, is it? I want to deal with that reality for a moment. There are times that we do not have an eagerness to share the gospel. To our shame, there are times where we are more eager to do the bidding of the world than to do the will of God. You know what I hope during your time at this school, somewhere, somehow, some way, you learn to have an eagerness, a wholeheartedness, an anticipation of, you know what, as much as in me is, I'm going to share the gospel. Young people, that's missing in large part. And it's desperately needed. We're eager about a lot of things, but when's the last time you've been wholehearted? Listen, we all know sometimes a week is rough and you wake up on Saturday and you're like, oh man, this is my one day. And I got all these classes, all this homework to do. Why did Brother Lucan give me these papers? Brother Bray shouldn't have given me this all to memorize. And a roommate says, hey, today's Saturday, we got soul winning at 10 o'clock. And the carnal part of you jumps out and is like, oh. This is where a lot of you are playing like you don't know a word of what I'm saying. And that's all right. God knows. I'm not saying that you won't struggle with that. I know that you have all kinds of business going on. But I'm going to tell you what, I pray that there'll be some times where there will erupt in your soul, you know what we get to do today? As much as in me is, some of you get excited about league games on Friday night. Nothing wrong with that. Amazes me, some of you get excited about league games knowing that your league's going to be beaten. You know, it's like we're just not that good this year. But one of the keys to not being ashamed of the gospel is having a passion that says, as much as in me is. And he said, I am ready to preach. I want to stop there for a moment. I want to talk to you fellas. Fellas, you know what I hope that you find out during your college experience? That one of the most exciting, most exhilarating things you can ever do is preach the gospel. When I was a teenager, the small town that I lived near, they had nothing to do on Friday nights except everybody hop in their pickup trucks that were jacked up that high and drive around all night long. And they would do that. They would do that. And one night, there were several preacher boys that were in my church. I was 17 years old. I don't think I'd come to Ambassador yet. I had surrendered to preach, and this very well could have happened the summer before I came to school. And the friend of mine, he said, you know what? He said, we ought to go down there, and he said, we ought to, like, preach to them. And boy, I said, you know what? That'd probably be, let's do that. And so we took my little pickup truck. I had a little brown Mitsubishi pickup truck and drove that thing right into the middle of the parking lot and hear all these cars. It's like the perfect amphitheater. I was like, man, this is great, you know. All these cars parked out there, we had no clue what we were doing. We'd never done this. We'd never taken a course, you know, cruising preaching 101. And you know what we did? We pulled right up in the middle of those. And you know what? I remember we stood in the bed of the pickup and used the cab and just preached a short gospel message. We did that. I'll never forget that. And do you know that what happened in my soul that night, it did more for me than $1,000. To preach the gospel. Some of you, maybe you've been rather inexperienced in the idea of preaching the gospel, whether it's to a group or whether it's to one individual. But I pray to God that soon some instances would come to your mind, experiences that you'd have where you'd share the gospel with somebody one-on-one or in a group setting, and you would see God do an amazing work. But we don't have that passion. When I hear people who used to go to Bob Jones in the 1960s driving 100 miles before the interstate system was refined to go to some far-off place and then preach the gospel, and I think here we are with interstates and air-conditioned vehicles and we can't make the trip. You know what we've lost? We've lost a passion. And I want to say to you ladies, you're like, I don't preach. Well, you can preach the gospel. You say, I'm not a preacher. I didn't say you're a preacher. But you know what, ladies? You know, even in your own way, in your own opportunities, you can share the gospel. It's just as important for our ladies not to be ashamed as it is our men not to be ashamed. And who knows, it may mean that a bold lady would, by her bold witness, maybe she'd motivate a man, young man, who's a little cowardly to get with the program and be bold with the gospel. When's the last time you've passed out a gospel tract? When's the last time you've talked to somebody about their soul in the course of conversation? Maybe I should ask it this way. When's the last time you didn't pull that tract out because you were ashamed? When was the last time you prayed, Lord, please let nobody be at this door because I just don't feel like I can talk to them? Listen to me. If you're not going to be ashamed, you have to have Paul's purpose. You have to have his perspective. You have to have his passion. But last of all, I want you to see his power. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. Here it is. For it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. You know, when you're talking to people about their soul, sometimes it's easy to get intimidated. You're like, I have no idea of what they're going to say. And that's the truth. But I'll tell you what, I have been sometimes taught some lessons by people that I knocked on doors and they asked me questions and I didn't always have the answer. Wait till you meet your first Jehovah's Witness and they start talking in a way that you're like, I've never heard that before. And sometimes you go out and soul winning, you go out talking to people about the Lord, and you get a little intimidated. You're like, Lord, I don't even know where to start. Listen, I can understand why you'd have that intimidation, but when you remember that the gospel of Christ is the power of God. I'll tell you, when I get in that conversation, as long as I remember God's on my side, it's going to be all right. It's the power of God unto salvation. You know, in our day and time, we talk about power. We so often illustrate it through electricity. And I know there were no light switches and no Duke Energies back in Paul's day, but whether it's a lightning strike or maybe it's some kind of explosive, some way to demonstrate power. Just a few days ago, I was at our house trying to replace a light switch. I am not an electrician. And it's sometimes dangerous to pretend like you are one. And my wife is standing over there, and I'm changing this out. And when I did, I let the metal part of the screwdriver touch a couple of places at the same time that it shouldn't have. And it was like something grabbed my hand. And I was like, whoa. I dropped the screwdriver. My wife screamed, and she's like, don't do that again. And like the typical unwise male, I did it again. I'll have you to know it is now screwed into the wall and it will remain there until I get somebody who knows what they're doing. You know, that's probably about as real an illustration as I can give you tonight when it comes to the idea of power. But listen to me, the gospel is the power, the Bible tells us the gospel of Christ is the power of God unto salvation. Now here's a question I want to ask you tonight. Do you remember when the power of God and salvation reached you? You remember that? When I came to school, I was introduced to a song by Dr. Scovel, a lot of songs by Dr. Scovel. But one of the songs that he introduced me to wasn't one that he had written, but it was one that you'd find in the old gospel songs. And the title of the song was, It's Real. And in that song, in the third verse, he says, but at last I'm tired of living a life of fear and doubt, for I wanted God to give me something that I would know about. So the truth would make me happy, and the light would clearly shine, and the Spirit gave assurance that I am His and He is mine. Verse 4, so I prayed to God in earnest, not caring what folks said. I was hungry for a blessing. My poor soul, it must be fed. Listen to this. When at last by faith I touched Him, and like sparks from smitten steel, just so quick salvation reached me. Oh, bless God, I know it's real. If you're here tonight and you're saved by the grace of God, listen to me, that power has touched. My friend, it has not only touched you, it has changed you. It may be that there's some of you here tonight, every time it comes to an idea of giving a salvation testimony, you shirk away from the opportunity. And it's not just the fact that you may be ashamed of Jesus, but you may be ashamed of the fact that you have never enjoyed the power of salvation because you have never trusted Jesus Christ as your Savior. I want to be careful tonight. I'm not just talking about a physical sensation and a physical shock, but I am telling you, when God touches a man's soul, it's supernatural. Some people may weep. Other people may laugh. Some people may just crack just a gentle smile. But whatever the case, if you have been touched by the power of salvation, listen to me, it's made a difference in you. And it's a difference that you ought to desire to see made in others. It is the power of God, and I love this, unto, here's a very, very powerful word, salvation. I'll tell you, one of the reasons we're not very eager in sharing the gospel is because that word salvation has become so common and unappreciated to us. Some people say, well, salvation, that just means I'm not going to hell. Oh, I'm going to tell you something. It means a lot more than that. You know, one of the reasons we're not eager to share with people the power of salvation, because we have lost the wonder of salvation in our own hearts. It's almost like we could say, I'm saved, so what? I mean, it's just really not that big a deal. Listen to me, when you got saved, God saved you from the power of sin. You don't have to be controlled by it the rest of your life. You can live in victory. God has made a way that you can live in, above the power of sin. In salvation, He saved you, listen to me, from the penalty of sin. Jesus Christ took your place. And praise God, don't you know one day you'll be saved from the presence of sin. Sorry, Brother Lukens, but no Dean of Students office in heaven. Only for pats on the back, maybe, but not demerits. We take this jewel, salvation, it's like throwing a diamond in the trash can. We just take it for granted. I'm telling you, if salvation's so wonderful, don't you think everybody ought to hear about it? I just want to conclude by asking you a question tonight and giving you four things. Why are we ashamed to preach? Why are we ashamed of the gospel of Christ? Why is it that we're hesitant to hand out gospel tracts? Why is it that when somebody engages us about our favorite sports team, we can throw out statistics like you wouldn't believe, but with the gospel we become very reticent? I've been doing some thinking about it from my own life. And there's at least four reasons that I come up with. They're not necessarily in order of importance, but one of the reasons we're ashamed of the gospel of Christ is that we've lost sight of who we are. We're debtor. That's what you are. You're not bigwig Bible college student. I'm not highfalutin evangelist. When it's all said and done, I am debtor. There's some of you tonight, it may be that God wants you to serve Him in some aspect of full-time service, and you know why you're not going to make it at this point in your life? It's because you think the world owes you, when the truth is you owe everybody else. Number two, I think that we are ashamed because we're more consumed with ourselves than we are other people. It's not all about you. We can list our needs a mile a minute, but we don't lift up our eyes into the fields. We don't look upon the multitudes with compassion. All we can see is ourselves. Number three, we're more concerned about what the world or others think than anybody else. You're this summer, maybe when it came as an upperclassman, you had opportunities to share the gospel, but you didn't. Why? Because you let the fear of your peers govern you rather than the fear of God. When you're more concerned about the opinion of the world than you are pleasing God, you mark it down, you'll be ashamed of the gospel. And the last one, I think we'll be ashamed of the gospel when we have forgotten what the gospel has done for us. You take salvation for granted, you'll be ashamed of the gospel. You let worldliness grip your soul, you'll be ashamed of the gospel. You think that academic requirements alone will qualify you for ministry, you'll be ashamed of the gospel. You know what my prayer is in setting the theme for this year? I'll tell you what it is. That a student body, maybe for the first time for some of you in this student body, that it would all of a sudden hit your heart and you would rise up and you'd say, so as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. If I could say it this way, instead of being ashamed of the gospel, be proud of it. Our boast is only Him. That's the only boast we have. Are you willing to be honest about your apathy with the gospel? And would you be willing to come out of your comfort zone this semester and say, God, I want to bear fruit? I hope so. Let's bow our heads together.